The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. After a week away from regular recording, we're back to catch up with all the action. We've got some record-breaking table toppers, a potentially season-defining injury, plenty of managerial intrigue, and we've already lost track of how many players are joining the party on a week-by-week basis, and whether there's any room for FIFA to join in as well. To catch up on all of this and plenty more, I am, as always, your host, Steve Crooks, and joined by our regular experts, Brandon Gemmers from Beijing. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm very happy, Steve. It's been a good couple of weeks.
Well, and some very good news coming out from your latest opponents as well. We'll get onto that shortly, and I'm joined, as always, by Cameron Wilson from Shanghai. How are you doing, Cam?
Not bad, Steve. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yes, we're into holiday schedule all around the world, so we're going to have some fun international recordings, I'm sure, over the next few weeks as well. But let's start with matters kind of closer to home and looking back over the last two rounds of fixtures. Cam, I'm going to come to you first on this. We've seen only the top two getting two wins from those last couple of rounds of games. Should we be celebrating some kind of unpredictability for the league here, or are we seeing this kind of levelling out to mediocrity that we've spoken about before?
Well, to be fair, you can't really say anything mediocre about Guan. I mean, the first team to win seven games in a row. I'm sure Brandon's going to wax lyrical about this, but, you know, credit where it's due, they've been really good. They only conceded two goals as well, which is very impressive. Evergrande, they've only failed to win one game, but that's a little bit surprising given some of the decisions we've talked about before. But I don't know, I think it's the top two teams are when I predicted Guan to win it before the season started, so it's not that surprising to me to see this start they've made be so strong. But you know, it's only seven games in, so let's see what happens.
Only seven games, but that's a fairly large chunk of a 30-game season, of course. And Brandon, Cam alluded to it there. This is a new league record for opening with seven straight. For you, does this say more about the improvements to Guan or the kind of kind fixture schedule that they've had? Some of the other teams not quite doing it. What do you think are the key factors here?
I mean, I think it's a little of both. Guan definitely has strengthened significantly. And I mentioned on Twitter this week that I think one of the biggest moves in the offseason was one of the least heralded, which was Zhou Dehai in goal. You know, he was a League One keeper last year. And if Lippi doesn't take him in the next national team squad, it would be a disgrace. The guy is arguably the future number one for China. He's been really solid, but I think more so than that, I think the biggest surprise is just SIPG dropping points to Tianhai, which was, other than that, I mean, Evergrande had a tough match against Shandong that they, Talisca, pulled out for them in the last seconds. But, you know, for Guan, they really haven't played anyone significant yet other than Jiangsu, who've been all over the place. And they've done what they need to do if they want to win the league, which is, you know, take points off the teams that they should beat. They've found ways to win some tough matches at times, some close matches, surprisingly close. The Renhe match we talked about before, but even the Hebei match, only 1-0. But they've found ways to win matches that in previous years they probably wouldn't have.
Both of the teams who've opened with six straight wins previously have won the league, so this is a great omen for them. They potentially only have one challenger at the top of this point, although Shanghai International Port Group are still within striking distance. There are a large number of points ahead of everyone else. I think we have to really have a look at the big Evergrande Guan fixture that's coming up on the weekend, and the big news that's coming out ahead of it is that Evergrande almost certainly without their key man Talisca for this game. Reports varying from everything from he's going to miss a couple of games to he's going to miss a couple of months to he's going to miss the rest of the season. I mean, I think there's an argument, Cam, that you could make that Talisca is the most important player in the league to his side. His goals and you know, the number of games that he's won almost single-handedly for them this year. This is a hammer blow if they're without him, isn't it?
It is. you don't need to say much about Talisca. His record speaks for itself. Basically kept Evergrande single-handedly in the title race last season, ultimately, of course, unsuccessful, but he's been one of these players who make an instant impact, and they're going to miss him for sure. Unfortunately, as for Evergrande, due to their very strange transfer policy, they loaned out Allen to Ten Hag, and they brought in Park Ji-soo, Korean defender, who's not played any games except, I think, in the ACL. So, unfortunately, they don't really have anyone to replace him. I mean, of course, Poligno is still a really excellent, high-quality player, but he's more of a playmaker than a forward, so I think Evergrande are going to struggle badly in this game.
Yeah, we've had some questions in on Twitter, lots of them around Talisca, obviously. In the short term, Brandon, do you think they're going to go with Park or Browning in defence as their kind of replacement second foreigner? And in the long term, do you think their goal is going to be to try and, you know, keep within striking distance and throw some more money around to bring someone in the other transfer window? Or could we see their title challenge really kind of faltering already?
Yeah, the biggest question is, honestly, is how late he's out. I mean, if this is just gamesmanship on the part of Evergrande, or if it's a serious injury, you know, we've seen people talking that he might be out for the season. I've seen nothing sort of at that extent, and everything seems to speculate that most likely he won't be in the lineup for the Guan match, but he still might be. I have no doubt that if he is out for the season, Evergrande will definitely go out and buy someone during the summer window to take over. If they have a spot, I don't think they have a foreigner spot anymore, because they've already brought in the two foreigners. I'm not sure on that, but I'm not sure if they would have a foreigner spot. But I personally go with Park. I think he's a little more proven than Browning if they have to. But it's, as Cammy said, it's a huge blow to the side, and they're still definitely going to be one of the top sides. They should be able to be in the top three or four without Talisca if he's out for the season, but it's going to be a different title race for sure.
It's quite uniquely Chinese football.
Yeah.
We're not sure if he's out for the season or if he's going to be in playing the next game. that's only in China type situation.
Well, I mean, this is, again, though, this is the gamesmanship you'd see before, you know, a big match like this anywhere. You know, you don't want to give out too much. You want to keep your opponent guessing to some degree.
Well, I don't see teams able to conceal the fact that a player's injury might be so bad he won't be able to play until the end of the season. There seems to be a very big gap between those two hypothetical situations.
I think as well that the lack of kind of clarity from the clubs is really what leads a lot of things to this kind of online rumour mill that we see on social media in both English and Chinese, I think, around lots of these big stories. Kind of focusing in on the game this weekend, we've seen some cracking games between these sides over the years, Evergrande often getting the upper hand. Do you think they would take a draw at this point, Cam? I mean, you mentioned Guan's defence. Evergrande building their strong start on a pretty good defence as well. Do you think a kind of nervy and mutually acceptable 0-0 might be on the cards here?
Yeah, especially if Talisca's not playing. I'm sure they'd be very happy with a draw. But it, like, so much depends upon his appearance or not. And as we said, there's not really anyone who's able to step into his shoes. So we really need to see if he's actually. I just think it's really weird that there's this rumour going about that he's not actually that badly injured, and then there's other people saying he's out for at least until the summer window, but we just need to wait and find out.
As always, we'll work on the scraps of information we do have, and the conclusion is often that we know a little but not a lot, along with everybody else. From a Guan perspective, Brandon, do you think they would take a draw here, or do you think they're going to go for the jugular to really build a bit of an early cushion at the top?
I think the one thing we have to consider about the Guan side that you're going to see is that, you know, they're traveling something like 3,000 kilometers from Harbin. Tomorrow night they have a match in Harbin. They're going to travel the next day to Guangzhou to play, two days later against Evergrande. So I think under the circumstances, a draw wouldn't be the worst result. If Talisca is indeed out, I think they kind of have to go for it. And, you know, it would be a statement match. It would be like, you know, we talked about SIPG winning in at Tianhe. I think it would be the same. It's been a number of years, you know, that Xiao Jiayi last minute goal, was it 3-4 years ago at Tianhe? And since then, they haven't won. So it would be a big statement match to win there.
Yeah, big kind of mental hoodoo to put to rest as well, as you mentioned. I want to pick up on the point you made regarding travel there, because everyone's getting excited about the return of the CFA Cup this week. We're going to review those fixtures in the recording next week so that we don't miss any of the games in between recording. There's been a lot of talk about the travel schedules and some of the Champions League teams wanting to get their matches rescheduled. Do you think, Cam, that the CFA could have been a bit kinder on those top sides? Or is this not just a bit more kind of democratic and fair that everybody gets served the same schedule? I mean, at the end of the day, the CFA's job is to run the domestic competitions, not to make life easy in international competitions for the sides, isn't it?
Usually in the past, they've arranged games so that teams played in ACL would have the game before their ACL game would be scheduled to be played a little bit early. For example, if you had an ACL game on Wednesday, you might play your league game on Friday instead of Saturday. And I think that's pretty reasonable. I think that happens in a lot of places. As to this time, I'm not sure exactly, to be honest, what the situation is with how the games are being scheduled. But what is the situation, actually? Have they just scheduled them?
Well, no. I mean, the only team that's really applying for anything is Guan, just because, like I said, they go basically the furthest you could go in China from, or one of the furthest trips you could go in Chinese football from Harbin to Guangzhou. They play in Harbin on Wednesday. They play in Guangzhou on Saturday, and then they play Junbok at home in the ACL on Tuesday. So it's a pretty rough travel schedule, and so they applied directly to the CSL CFA without first talking to Heilongjiang about it. And I think Heilongjiang wasn't too happy about that, and so wasn't really willing to give in at all.
Well, you know, I think, personally, I tend to, I don't know, there's a lot that's said in the European media about, you know, the Dutch governing body giving Ajax all of this preferential treatment ahead of their Champions League games and so on. I'm not a fan, really. I don't like this idea of kind of trying to, you know, cushion and seed your team's ability in the Champions League. I like to see everyone given the same treatment, really, but there's certainly lots going on in Chinese football where maybe not everybody gets the same treatment anyway, and we can move on to some of that later on. A couple of the other questions about domestic matters before we start to look at some off-field issues. One of the more interesting situations over the little break that we've taken is the kind of managerial, well, the rumour merry-go-round around the managerial situation down with Fuli and whether, you know, Stojkovic is going to be in or out and who might be replacing him and who's being parachuted in above him at the moment. Cam, what exactly is going on there and, you know, how much longer do you think he's going to be in the job?
I think it's unfortunate. I don't think RNF are doing any worse than they would be expected to be doing in 7 games, middle of the table. They've not played as well as maybe they were playing last season, but I really think that a lot of times managers in CSL tend to get the rough end of the deal pretty quickly. I guess we're going to find out in the very near future.
Yeah, poisoned chalice there. It seems kind of suffering for some maybe of the early success and expectation reshaping that he did. One final question on the CSL before we move on. I think this is an interesting one that we got from Will on Twitter. Who's actually in danger of relegation from the league this season? Now, it's very early on still, Brandon, but one of the interesting things is we don't really see anybody cut adrift this year. It looks like maybe 2/3 of the league really should be looking over their shoulders at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much to be expected. We've seen the last couple years, the relegation battle, at least for a number of sides, things are pretty tight. And so I don't think it's really a surprise that that is the case this season. I think Wuhan definitely has to be worried. I wasn't really convinced about them at the start of the year, and having one of their key foreigners suspended for a number of games is an issue there. But outside of that, I think it could pretty much be anybody in that second half of the table. Basically, everyone from Fully down, I think, could potentially be in danger and needs to shape up.
Yeah, lots of mediocrity there, and I'm sure we'll get plenty of chances to talk more about some of those sides individually as we go through the year. One final matter, kind of looking ahead to games that are coming up after the next round of fixtures. There's an absolutely enormous game in the Champions League for Shanghai International Port Group, Cam. And basically, it's if they win this next game, I believe they're in Japan, right? That they go through. If they lose it, they're out after five games played already. How much of a priority is this for them, given their poor start in the league, relatively?
Good question. I have no idea. I've predicted that Chinese clubs won't do that well in the Champions League this year. But I wasn't expecting them to be necessarily out by the group stage. SIPG, obviously, it's a crunch game. I think they'll be wanting to do their best. I mean, as I said, it's still really early in the season, and there's a lot of football to be played this year. So, especially as SIPG are kind of looking a little bit shaky in the league, they don't look quite as strong as they were last year, lost Willie, blah, blah, blah. As we said before, I think they would be wanting to do their utmost to try and get to the knockout stage in ACL.
Yeah, we'll get a chance to look back on that game potentially in the pod next week as well. And a number of the sides could seal their qualification. Equally, it could go down to the wire for all of them. So let's look back on that again when we know a bit more. Plenty of off-field matters for us to discuss in the second half of the show today. But before we do that, it's time to take a break for our regular Phenomenon of the Week section.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
Now, really, we should call it, I guess, Phenomenon of the Fortnight this time. The winner from the vote last time around, and I'm sure you'll be very pleased to hear this, Cam, was a lot of people getting behind your deconstruction of the Evergrande political project, pushing Nico Jenneris into second and the red card into third. The upshot of all of that is that you get a free swing at going first this week, Brandon, this fortnight, rather. So who or what has caught your eye and would you like to put in front of the gallery that is our loyal listeners?
When you set a record, as meaningless as it is, if there is no silverware added at the end of the year, I have to go with Beijing Guoan for winning the seven straight to start the season.
Difficult to argue with that. I will go next because I had second last time. I think, and I've been a bit critical of some of his performances, I've got to go with Wule this time around for a lovely goal that I think a few people online have likened it to kind of that David Platt overhead swiveling volley against Belgium. So, Wule for getting on the score sheet again over in Spain. Cam, do you have another political project or are you going to stick to something on field for your nomination this week?
I'm going to try and get back to the football at last. I'm going to nominate Shenhua's goalkeeper, Sen Jun, for a fairly terrible performance. But to be fair to him, it was only his third CSL game in 8 years. And when you're 32 years old, it must be difficult to summon the wherewithal to put together a solid show between the sticks. But just for his sheer phenomenal lack of experience for a 32-year-old, I would like to nominate Sen Jun.
Anyone who can make Li Shuai look cat-like in comparison definitely deserves a nomination for something. So enough of the on-field matters. There's been plenty going on off the pitch for us to catch up on as well. One story that's a week or two old now, but I do think is important to catch up on, is some of the further kind of crackdown on fan culture that we've been seeing with the arrests of some of the kind of Guan ultras following some celebrations after a win there. Brandon, can you just kind of recap the situation for us and what the kind of current ongoing fallout up in the capital is?
Yeah, so last weekend or 2 weekends ago now, when the Guan played at Hebei, the fans, as they sometimes do, had a bit of a on-the-spot sort of march to the stadium where they were in a bike lane and set off flares and everything and singing and waving flags like you'd see in other places in the world. And that wasn't taken too kindly by the Langfang police. They ended up after the match arresting six people. Some of them are still in jail. They were going to be in jail for 6 to 15 days. Some are still there. And it's basically, you know, they're complaining that it caused disorder to the traffic patterns. It hurt the environment of Langfang. Having the flares in the air affected the air quality in Langfang and everything. And it's just crazy. While I can sort of understand needing to keep things somewhat organized, you know, this was something that really didn't bother anyone. And for it to be cracked down this harshly is it shows what fans have to deal with here.
Yeah, Cam, as the man who's coining the whole China hates football hashtag on Twitter, how does this rank in the latest kind of developments for you? Is this kind of a new low? Is this a precedent that you think we might see extended to other cities?
I wouldn't say it's anything particularly new. I think it's the severity of the intolerance towards expressions of fan support. I mean, it'd be one thing if they were actually doing something wrong, but by all accounts, they were just simply doing as Brian just said. They were just having an impromptu march to the game. And also, as Brian very rightly said, this is seen as something which is akin to a tourist attraction or something for passers-by to watch and to admire as fans make their way to the stadium. I know, for example, in MLS, Seattle Sounders do this like a brass band, march through the streets for every game. What a fantastic advert to your community that there's a football club in the city that people love and care about. But you bring this to China, as a country which is in the headlines of global football for trying to do all manner of things to try and improve its game, and yet the very fundamental things, the most fundamental things, such as having people give up their time and effort and money to invest that time and money and their emotions and to put their heart and soul into supporting a team, the very people the game needs the most, and certainly from a supporter term of view, their people are being criminalised. So, I mean, what else can you say? It's just, like I said, the China hates football hashtag is admittedly a little facetious to make the point, but I really feel that it's, like I said, it's not something which is new as such. I've seen this over the last 10 years. There's been a gradual tightening of control of fans, but now it seems to have reached a new level of, how to say, intolerance from the authorities. It just goes back to the Chinese system's historic fear of public gatherings.
Yeah, and I think maybe the kind of increased crackdowns that we're seeing is one of those examples of where football's a mirror for kind of society and politics as a whole as well. One of the other elements of this, Brandon, I wanted to touch on was the interesting reactions whereby, in some cases, kind of ultras groups and other clubs were being more supportive of these guys than the kind of casual match-going Guan fans themselves.
Yeah, I mean, this is a point that I've hit home on before. Me being a former member of the group that sort of led the march has sort of affects my opinion or my thoughts on these things. But at the same time, what I've always said is that, you know, the fans that are members of these supporter sections that are standing, singing for all 90 minutes, that are going to away matches, that have this deep passion for their clubs, I share more with someone in the Lanmo than I do with someone who's just sitting at a Guan match, even if he's a season ticket holder or something, because we sort of have that same attitude, that same mentality, that same passion, and not everyone has that passion or has that idea of support. And you can call it passion, you can call it craziness, you can call it whatever you want, but I just think that there is sort of the people that are in these sections sort of share a lot more with each other than they do even with their own fans.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Completely would back that up, I think, as well. Just to give a very brief anecdote, this season was another example of how different types of fans supporting the same club are often in conflict. There was a fan in the North Terrace at Hong Kong a few games ago. He complained that some of the ultras guys down the front were waving big flags. He complained he couldn't see, which is kind of absurd because the North Terrace is, for want of a better description, like an active support area where flags and drums are expected and people understand that they may not have a perfect view of the game all the time. I mean, after all, they're behind the goals. It's not exactly a great view to begin with. But the thing was, of course, he was given short shrift by, you know, the capos. He was saying, hey, come on, this is the fan area. If you shouldn't be in here if you're going to complain about that. But the thing was, About 5 minutes later, the police came down and told the fans to put the flags down, and that basically tells you everything you need to know about the problems facing football fan culture in China.
Yeah, worrying signs there. Hopefully we do kind of see a lot of these supporters, you know, be continue to allow to support the teams the way they do, because, I mean, otherwise you're going to have a very kind of anodyne experience, and that's not really conducive to growing the game in any way, shape or form. One thing which is hugely conducive to growing the game, of course, is signing a memo of understanding with FIFA. Absolutely brilliant story this, Brandon. Is this FIFA kind of officially sanctioning their approval of government interference?
China are the overlords of FIFA for a while, and the Chinese, the way the government works, you have a position in the party and you have a position in the government or whatever, or you have a position in the government and you have a position in a non-governmental organization, and even though there's supposed to be a clear division between the two, somehow you're able to divide your own brain or something where you can separate those two. And this is sort of what we're getting here with this FIFA agreement. FIFA, you know, they know where the money is. They know who they need to keep happy, and they know where the future of football has to be. And so that's why they're basically, I mean, they're willing to do whatever China wants, and they're never going to call China out for these sort of minor or somewhat more significant government interferences here and there.
Yeah, Cam, do you think it's mainly a political or mainly a financial decision from FIFA? Are they looking at the government here? Are they looking at many of these big sponsors that they get? I mean, again, it's difficult to separate the two, right?
Yeah, I mean, finance is the overriding factor at the end of the day. I think everyone understands that about FIFA. You only need to look at the sponsorship of the last World Cup, because there are really significant Chinese sponsors, the Wanda Group, and I forget now, the dairy company was
Mengniu.
Yeah, exactly. Among others, they were very happy to pour huge amounts of money at sponsoring the Cup. And as long as FIFA is getting that cash cow, they are going to do just whatever it takes to keep that money flowing. And if that means accepting someone to the FIFA council who's at the same time quite openly a Communist Party secretary for the CFA, which is, I mean, you can't think of a more openly contradictory situation in terms of football and the CFA and the government are supposed to be separate. I mean, it was interesting in the beginning when the Chinese Football Reform Plan in 2015 said that separating the CFA from the government was a key aim of that. It was very surprising to see them actually want to do that, because as we can see from FIFA, they don't actually have to, because FIFA's turning a blind eye. They always have. And as Brandon says, they probably always will. But in the end, this plan in this regard anyway, as regards separation, I mean, it's already gone worse in terms of government interference. So I just think it's very, very disappointing. I think that a lot of the things which have happened in the game in China in the past couple of years have not been positive developments. Not exclusively negative, but mainly like this. And unfortunately, I don't really see that's going to change when FIFA's basically given it their backing.
Well, I'm sure there's something that we can all be very optimistic about, and you know, you've mentioned disappointing news. Brandon alluded to what the future has to be there. Clearly, the future is bringing in a guy in his mid-70s to return as your national team coach, because it all went so well last time. It appears that Lippi is on his way back after Cannavaro steps down. Brandon, I want to talk a bit about Cannavaro first. I mean, has he stepped down voluntarily? Was he pushed? Does it really matter? And was he ever really expected, and this is coming in a couple of the questions, to be a long-term solution beyond this kind of interim role?
I mean, I do have a feeling that when they originally thought about him, when they originally brought him in, that he was sort of, the intention was sort of, we'll see how he does. We'll see how he does in the China Cup, and we'll go from there. I do think that they thought they had someone that could very well be the future manager, and then he had the disaster that he had in that competition, and they very quickly started looking elsewhere. Unfortunately, and this tends to be an issue in China, when they're looking elsewhere, they don't look very far. And a return for Marcelo Lippi, you know, he was spotted in Guangzhou. Most likely he'll be at the game on Saturday, is just a disgrace. I had my issues with Lippi at the end of the Asian Cup, and I don't think that he's the manager for the future. While I know that you can argue that the players aren't that strong and there's only so much a manager can do with this team, you need a manager that is going to be passionate and is going to make the changes that need to be made, is going to bring in the young players that we need to see. And we've never seen that out of Lippi. We've never seen a willingness to do that. And I don't know why that's going to change now. I really, really shocked and really disappointed with this move.
Wow, Brandon's kind of taken all of the vitriol there. I'm not sure if there's much criticism left that you can give, Cam. I mean, the one thing for me that this says is it really forces, I think, if it is true, a reappraisal of that China Cup squad, because I was a bit less critical than others in that if you know this is your last tournament, then it's kind of okay to take the old stages and do as well as you can and try to cement your legacy. But if there's any chance of you coming back, then you really could have gone with some younger players. I mean, I can't imagine you're any more excited about this development than Brandon is.
That's a good point you just made, Steve, actually, that his squad for the Asian Cup was very much a kind of all-in, picking whoever he thought would be the best for that particular cup and making absolutely no kind of concession to developing future talent. It looks like a more questionable decision even now that Lippi's seemingly going to come back to take over the reins. I've said many times before, I don't really think whoever's in charge of China is really, it's not really a major question. I mean, some managers, yeah, they're better than others. Lippi is a complicated, it's a complicated choice. I mean, in some ways, although I think, I don't think it really matters that much, I actually think Brandon's got a pretty fair point. I think, I mean, if we are going to think about who's the best manager for China right now, I really don't think it's Lippi. But having said that, I mean, there's some, I mean, he knows China, he knows the players, he knows the system. Is that really what China needs? I personally don't think so, but it could be worse. They could have gone with someone kind of unknown in the past who might have done even worse than what they've already done. But I mean, I don't really like saying this, but it's just like Groundhog Day with the national team again and again, and unfortunately it's difficult to see that changing. It's just quite a strange decision. I mean, why did they not just make a longer term agreement with Lippi before? I mean, why didn't they just say, look, we don't want you to leave after the Asian Cup, just could you stay for till the World Cup qualification period? I mean, why give Cannavaro these cup two games? I mean, it's only two games. I mean, yeah, the China were pretty bad in the China Cup, but it's just two games. So I don't really understand what basis his decision was made of, and I don't think anybody does. And unfortunately, I don't really see anything changing in terms of the national team's fortunes anytime soon.
Confusion and disappointment, the overriding emotions there, and it's hard to disagree with either of those. We got a huge mailbag this week. We can't get to all the questions, unfortunately, but there is one that I want to round things out with, and it takes us back to the topic at the start of the show, actually. I'm really interested, Brandon, actually, in your take on this one. Question again from Will Scott, and part of his series of questions. Can Guan hold on and not bottle the CSL? And I actually think this is a really interesting question, because if Talisca's injury is bad, then you could argue that Guan's biggest rivals at this point are themselves, and the kind of emotion around bringing the title back to the city and so on. Is that something that you're concerned about?
We talked a lot about SIPG and bottling things last year. I think for Guan this year, it's a really different team. And I talked a lot about sort of the projection of things. Last year was the CFA Cup. This year, the focus has to be on the league. They have the talent. Really, they added the new players they added are just really solid top to bottom. Found so outside of Ho Sader and Kim and Yanaris, they found some real gems with Wang Gang, who has really impressed so far, as well as Zhou Dehai. I can't stop singing his praise in goal. So they have the squad. I think sort of what will be May is the biggest test for them. They have Evergrande, they have SIPG both on the road. They have two potential major Champions League games as well. So I really feel that what happens in this month will decide if Gwan wins the title. And if they're still in first, if they're still undefeated at the end of May, or, you know, if they only lose 1-0 or something at SIPG and they win or draw all the other matches, I think that we have to be looking at them as serious leaders for the title. But they haven't shown a reason why yet to doubt them, but they haven't really been challenged. And I think what happens in May will show if they have that resolve or not.
Yeah, we could see some cracks there in May. You're obviously kind of confident in them as the team that you tipped up at the start of the season, Cam. What do you think they should be kind of fearing most? Do you think that a surprise loan return for Woolley might be enough to kind of throw his old team back into the mix? Do you think that Evergrande might drop their crazy policy, or are really Gwan the team to beat at this point?
I think Gwan's going to win the league. I'm more certain of that than I ever was at the start of the season. The main reason is just the quality of the player they signed. Just some of the political stuff happened in the off-season. Gwan chairman's attitude towards the 55-man training squad thing that happened last year, he was very openly critical of it, indicated to me that the Gwan were going to really ignore all the nonsense which has been going on off the pitch. So it's really all about Gwan. Evergrande and the SIPG, if they are trailing, you might see some kind of movement from them in the transfer market in the summer. But by then, maybe it would be too late. We just need to wait and see.
Yep, as always, we will wait and see. And we do hope, actually, for some more off-field madness, because it does give us plenty to talk about. But I'm sure there'll be lots of good action from the on-pitch action, and we will kind of dissect that big top-of-the-table fixture when we're back next week as well. But for this week, this has been your Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Worldies Football. Thanks, as always, for joining us, Brandon.
Thank you, Steve. Happy Labor Day, everyone.
Indeed, and thank you for the insight, as always, from Shanghai, Cam.
Cheers, Steve. Have a good one, everyone.
And listeners, we will all be back with you after the kind of working holidays, working weekends that you've got to look forward to there in China. We'll be back with you again next week. But for this week, I've been your host, Steve Crux. Thank you for listening.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。